Blog Talk Radio.
Unbothered, impermeable, unbothered, impermeable, unbothered. I'm the people's champ, Obama, and you don't understand. Melania, permeable, unbothered, sick, allergic to the con artist. Fake woke, an imposter, only real ones up in my roster. Like Junior C, that's my roster. You know, I just been bossed up. I've been high, my shit been fucked up. I've been high, my shit been good.
Hello. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. We're back at it again.
This actually felt like a much longer Tuesday. I don't know. I feel like it's been a long time.
It's been a long 8 weeks.
It feels like it's been long. This felt long. It doesn't normally feel long, but this one, for some reason, it felt very long.
Yeah.
Great.
So, how are you doing? Long time no speak.
Oh, right. About a couple of hours. Just a couple of hours. Nothing much.
That's
just glad
funny.
I got through the work day. And... Oh.
Yeah.
Just trying to maintain. I'm hoping
everybody
out there that's listening is doing well and, you know, trying to maintain, keep maintaining, keep your head up. You know, we'll get through this no matter what.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and I'm glad that today's show is something other than, you know, talking about that, because a lot of times it's like, it's a lot. It's a lot to have to live in it for.
Yeah.
Even though it's good to talk about it, because a lot of times people don't have outlets to be able to talk about it or think about it on different levels besides just hearing, you know, the statistics and seeing, like, negative. So it's good to, you know, process it and talk about it, but then, you know, you got to step away and talk about other things.
I agree, especially since today is the Earth Day birthday of Malcolm X. So
that's right.
I see you.
By any means necessary.
There we go. Hey, I'm with you all. I am with you all. You know, we're celebrating his 95th birthday. El Shabazz. He would have been 95 years old today. He was born 1925.
Wow.
That's
amazing.
And he died.
I can't even imagine.
Yep. It's quite so. He died in, he was 39 years old that February. Mm. And he was about to become 40 that following May 19th.
Wow.
And when you think of the impact that this man has had on history, and like we've spoken about before, not just African American history, but American history and world history.
Mm-hmm.
He's changed it. You know, the embassy in Turkey, where the American ambassadors and workers, the diplomats in Turkey, the country Turkey, as they are about to wind down the road that takes them to their embassy. It's called Malcolm X Avenue or Drive or whatever.
And I had
named
no idea.
After Malcolm X.
That's amazing.
They have had stamps in Iraq dedicated to Malcolm X. They have had stamps in Africa. Mm. They've had posters in streets named after Malcolm X. Not 39 years of age. And when I just think of the total impact that he has had on so many lives, that we should call his name even to this day, have a college course dedicated to it. We all have to ask ourselves, where is the spirit of Malcolm in us? And that's That's what we have to begin to look at. We tend to celebrate people. We get caught up in the messenger and we forget the message. And when you're dealing, wouldn't it be phenomenal to have his opinion on what's going on today?
What would Malcolm do?
Yeah, what would Malcolm do? What, you know, what would he do? What would he say to us? You know, and it's just profound, particularly for your generation. And that's why, you know, when I was getting ready, you know, to have this conversation with y'all, you know, my thing was like that, you know, just to wonder for the millennials and for those that never knew him. What is your image? Because when I taught the college class, I was teaching to students that he was more a mythological figure than he was anybody real. And so it became important for me to bring Malcolm alive in the classroom. Let them feel him. Let them see him. Not just the DVDs and the books that you read and things like that. That all has its place. But to analyze that brother's personality and his spirit from various perspectives. And it's just, you know, he was very profound. And also in many ways misunderstood. And we as a people better get ourselves together. Because what Malcolm was talking about back then is still the same exact thing happening today. And it is so obvious. It is so obvious that what he was saying was correct. Many African Americans opposed him when he died. Many opposed him. 80% of black folk was scared to death of Malcolm.
Wow. That's cool.
It was basically only my generation. And even I was young because when he died, I was in the sixth grade.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was the young people. And out of Malcolm's death, the next year was the birth of the Black Panther Party. 1966. And before that, Malcolm supported, which was very interesting, Malcolm supported the Deacons of Defense, who really were the precursor to the Black Panther Party. You know, these brothers say, yeah, you may kill us. This is what the brothers said down in Natchez and Jackson, Mississippi, the Deacons of Defense. They said, yeah, you may kill us, but we're going to kill a couple of y'all. And they armed themselves and they shot at them KKK and all of those other groups that were coming in to terrorize them. It got so deep that the white folk, I'm speaking about a specific group of white folk, I'm speaking about the supremacists, the fragilists, and the people that would do harm to black people. When they would ride through those towns, they used to ride through and try to terrorize black people by shooting and doing all sorts of things. The Deacons of Defense got tired, and they said, no, you're not going to ride through my community no more and get away with it. So there was one night, the KKK decided to don their hoods and ride through a black community, but they rode through the wrong community because they were shot.
Picked the wrong one.
Okay, and when that happened, and people saw the end result of it, the Deacons of Defense started getting more people wanting to join that organization.
Wow.
And, you know, we're talking about when Malcolm was alive and well, in the 50s and 60s. When I went down to Natchez, I really went to Jackson, Mississippi, one Kwanzaa, to speak to the community there. And they brought me to Natchez, Mississippi, where they have a museum, and we were all talking, and they started telling me about the Deacons of Defense. That's where they came from, right where I was. That's where the Deacons of Defense were born. And there was one elder brother that was interested in meeting me, but things didn't happen the way they should, and we weren't able to meet. But that was one of the original brothers that had been part of the Deacons of Defense. And so what we're talking about with Malcolm is a thought process where Malcolm said, self-defense is not violence. It's intelligence. Listen, when people come through your neighborhood, like, for instance, with our brother Ahmed Arbery, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When people come at you like that, and they are willing to kill you, it's your obligation to defend yourself.
Hey.
It ain't about turning the other cheek. I understand that concept, but that don't work. That didn't work in our neighborhood. You don't turn the other cheek, because when you turn the other cheek,
mm-mm,
that stops you from being able to see them. And when you don't see them, cowards will always take advantage. These are not people you're dealing with. These are not humane beings you're dealing with. And this is what Adam was trying to tell us. He was trying to tell us this. When you look at the faces of those two individuals that have been caught up in this Arbery case, look at their face. They look like monsters.
They are monsters.
Yes, but they look like monsters. See, you can have a monster that don't look like a monster. You can have somebody that has all the physical appearances of somebody that could be very attractive and very kind, but in their heart dwells the devil.
Did you see the picture of him and the governor of Georgia?
I'm sorry, say that again. Who?
There's a picture of the father, that the one that shot him, and the
No, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that. But he was part of the police department.
But I don't know. I don't know how true it is. But I saw something that said that the police department asked them to watch the neighborhood, and that's why it took so long. I don't know if it's true, so this is allegedly, that's why it took so long for them to arrest them, because they were, they didn't do the right thing by asking them to do what, because they're not part of the police force anymore. But that's why that it
no,
took
but
so long.
Even if
I don't
you
know
have neighborhood watch, even if you have neighborhood watch,
I'm
that
not
does
saying
not
that it was
give
the right
you
thing.
No, no, I'm just saying, like, even if you were to not to watch the neighborhood, you're not supposed to go, and especially with guns, to go attack somebody.
Right.
Like, there's neighborhood watch, neighborhood watch everywhere. But that does not give the right for them to do exactly what they were doing to him, regardless.
But then they got off, but he pursued a child and got off. So, like...
Yeah.
Nobody cares. They don't care. But there's always going to be a loophole that protects them. And that's the way that the country is set up. The country is set up. And I'm not arguing with you. I'm agreeing with you. But this country is set up for loopholes. And if you know a loophole and if you catch the right person, you're going to get away with whatever you want to get away with. And it's unfortunate, but
you know,
we have to be able to protect ourselves.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that I just want to send out a sense of appreciation to the community that's fighting back. Because the changes that are occurring, see, it's not the same. It was very different when I was a young man compared to what's going on today. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference
is
social media and black folk help. Because even in social media, to tell you the truth, you know, when you deal with Rodney King, going back to 1992, okay, that beatdown on Rodney King was on tape.
Yeah.
But
the
jury could find the police innocent.
Mm. As they always do.
But the thing is that the response that the black community gave, even though they try to make it seem that it was illegal and wrong, because that's what they're going to do. But the response that the black community gave changed the structure of that case. The same is true with Mike Brown. The birth of the Black Lives Matter movement, no matter what anybody says about it, no matter what anybody feels about it, because, you know, fam, the way I do is I step back and look at it from a cosmic perspective. I don't get all emotional about it.
Yeah.
The Black Lives Matter has made a change in everyday life, no matter what anybody says. The Me Too movement has made a change in the way things are done. Mm-hmm. And the forces are going to try to turn us against each other.
Yep.
Because I tell people that have a complaint about the Black Lives Matter, I have one simple question. What are you doing?
What are you doing? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, except complaining.
Yep.
I hear you. See, when Malcolm died, the great majority of black people were against him. When Martin Luther King died, even people in his own contingent were against him.
Mm-hmm.
But after they died, they deified them.
Yep.
But when they was trying to drop the knowledge on us when they were alive, we didn't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I say to the younger generation, well, you know, like Condi came when I was talking to you yesterday, apologize for the way the adults are acting. I'm ashamed of my generation. Not all, not everybody. I'm not speaking in absolutes. But I'm shamed, in a sense. I'm saying this just as a story because I'm really not shamed. But the idea is that when are we going to be brave enough? When are we going to be Malcolm enough?
Mm-hmm.
To tell our young people the realities of what they face and what they're going to have to do, and to invest in them and to ensure that you understand. Yeah, I believe in nonviolence. When you're dealing with nonviolent people, I believe in that.
And humans, I believe that, actual humans.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I believe that the innocent should never have to pay. No innocent person should have to pay for the guilty. I live by that. That's what Ma'at demands of us.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone's about to hurt you or your family, if somebody is about to come at you to do something because they are afraid of you or they have a lack of respect for themselves and therefore a lack of respect for you, it is your obligation. Malcolm said, if you come after me, I'm going to make it so that not only do you never harm me again, you ain't never going to harm anybody again because I'm sending you to the cemetery. Oh. He said, that's not violence. That's intelligence. And and that's what our young people are asking us.
Yep.
The violence that we see in our communities, all of that, be it misguided, it's misguided because we didn't guide it, the adult population. We're still playing the okey-doke. Right now with reparations, coming up out of this, we ought to have a whole new view towards reparations. All this time they're talking about they ain't got the money. They ain't got the money. Oh, that would throw the country off. But when this pandemic hit, within a couple of weeks, they found $2 trillion. So who's zooming who here? They got the money. They could do what they want to do.
They created the money. Please.
Out of thin air.
Not even real.
That's right. That's the way it's been all the time. So all this time they've been talking about what they could not do. They could have done it. They could have just tossed, made up, gone to the mint and made up a couple billion, $1 trillion and gave it out to black folk if they wanted to. And that's what Malcolm was attempting to tell us.
But they aren't going to do that because then you have to admit that you did something wrong. So they're not going to do that.
That's right. And you know something? I don't need their apology.
I've been saying that. No, but everybody's up in arms about that conversation, so I don't even have it with people. But
it's all right because people had a problem with Malcolm's view too. So I've never really been troubled by people coming after me in terms of my views because you did the same thing to Malcolm, you did the same thing to Martin Luther King, and you did the same thing to everybody else who's ever tried to tell us they were scared to death of the Black Panther Party. They didn't know what to do with Huey Newton or Bobby Seale. They stood frozen with all of the different things that were going on so that, you know, the bottom line to me is that we are all in a position that that you speak your mind and you deal with it and understand that when you speak truth that there will always be people who will be against you. no matter what.
That's their job.
They'll always be against you. They were born to do that. And you were born to make sure that they did not succeed in what they were trying to do. That's a,
you know,
they did it to Malcolm.
When you told me that we were having a conversation, and it was a personal conversation, like I was talking to you, I don't remember what it was about, but that made so much sense to me when you said that about some people, like some people are like born to try to get you to not do what you're supposed to do, and it's your job to not to make sure that they're not successful. That really changed my views on just like who I am and who I'm supposed to be and what I'm doing. It really makes a lot of sense because there's literally people, and even when you talk about the obstacle, like you're your only.
There's only one enemy. You only have one enemy. Each of us only has one enemy, and that's the internal voice, whatever you want to call it, that's always trying to put you down. Always trying to make you think you can't achieve this. Always telling you, oh, you can't do that. Oh no, you don't have the power to do that. That's your enemy. Once you defeat that inside of you, everybody else on
everything
the outside
else is an
obstacle. Now, I did an interview. I did an interview where folk took issue with what I said. Because they were having problems with, well, there was a challenge that I was insinuating that the white man was not our enemy.
Oh.
And I was trying to, I said, I'm coming at this conversation from a different perspective. This is a different conversation. I'm talking about the spirit of excellence and success. I'm talking about when you are facing things. I understand what peoples of European descent have done. I understand that. And I'll tell you something else, which is kind of controversial, but see, this is the type of thing I'm willing to talk about just to put it out there for us to talk about. Even if we have a cancel culture on Charles Barkley, and I understand how people feel towards him and some of the things that he says. I understand all that. But there are times that people, no matter how you may feel about them, say something that's intelligent that you can apply.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that you're able to pierce that veil of your own disdain for them, for you to be able to take what they say, think about it, and adjust it to your life. And he was on an interview with, I think it was Don Lemon, and the other brother with the glasses, Van Jones.
Mm.
And he said that young African-American sports people who have been given a scholarship should take it. Big discussion now about college players getting paid and things like that. Okay. That has its merit. Colleges are making billions of dollars off of college
players.
And if there's money to be made, everybody need to get a little something-something. But what he was saying was, don't turn down the scholarship because they're not going to give you a salary. Because your free scholarship and your 4 years of playing football, he said, because if you don't go to that college and you decide to go to your community college, that will impact your game. People will not see you if you're playing.
Why do people have an issue with that? Because of where it came from? Because of who it came from?
Because
of who said it?
Well, nobody said that about what I'm saying to you right now. I'm saying that people have a problem with Charles Barkley.
Oh, okay.
Because he does say some things that really, not really. You know, and I understand that. Okay. But he also says some very profound things, too. And we have to take the best and leave the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I was likening that to what I was saying about the enemy within, the battle that we have with that enemy within. That's the major enemy that we have, which is, but people perceive that I'm saying we are our own enemy, and they're missing my philosophical point because they're looking at it emotionally because they're looking at what I'm saying on the surface.
People like to argue and people like to fight. That's the only thing. That too.
That That's true too.
But people also have to personify everything. It's the same thing when you explain the concept of the Asarian drama, that they're not actual people, but they're within you. It makes so much sense. But this society has personified everything. It's why Jesus exists. It's why God is a man. It's why the Virgin Mary is a 12-year-old girl. These things are not actual people, but people that don't understand something have taken it and personified it and then poisoned the people that originally understood the concept in the first place.
Exactly.
And we believe what people say. Everything has been personified. And that's the reason why people can't see what's in them. They don't realize that the devil is not separate from them, or what the idea of the devil is not separate from them. The devil isn't even separate from God. The balance between the devil and whatever is the opposite is what God is, but it's not. God is not separate from the devil. It's not a separate thing. You have the ability to make one choice or another choice, and depending on the choice that you make, determines you know what, how you live your life. But it's being personified, and it's not actually people. They're not people, so that's why people don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
and
they
I
think that
room.
You're saying that they're bad.
Yeah, and I leave room for that, you know. But again, we still can wrap this up into Malcolm, because most of the things that Malcolm said was absolutely correct, but they weren't ready to hear that. One of the most important things that Malcolm told us, and this was an issue that he had with Martin Luther King and those that followed Dr. King, about civil rights. Martin Luther King was fighting for the laws to change. And in so many ways, he was absolutely correct. What Malcolm said was equally correct. Because he was saying any law that the European has developed, they will break it if they have to.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've seen happen
Not
over the
only...
past 3 years, they have broken the Constitution and gotten away with it.
But not only will they break it, they already have something set up in place that explains why they didn't break the law. So not only do they have the right to break the law, because there's something written in fine print that gives them the right to break the law in the first place.
You see, what Martin Luther King was doing, I understand. What Malcolm said is it's not the civil laws you have to break down, because civil laws are made by men and women. He said, what you have to do is you have to charge them not with civil rights violations. You have to charge human rights.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you change the human rights doctrine, the civil rights automatically change with them. Automatically. Example is, when the civil rights law of 1965 was passed by President Johnson, it was only another year before the immigration law of 1966 had to pass, because the civil rights law showed how the immigration laws violated civil rights law. The reason why there are people from all over the world in America today, they could thank...
Because of black people.
Black folk fought.
Yep.
Because when black folk fought for their civil rights, it broke down the immigration laws. The same is true with civil rights and human rights. And that is why Malcolm was taken out at the most important time of his life, because he was about to bring the United States before the United Nations. Human rights violations.
Damn.
And he had brought together some of the finest lawyers to be able to put together the legal plan for that. Now, what's interesting what's interesting is the fact that when Malcolm was in the eighth grade, he tells the story of Mr. Otrosky. And Mr. Otrosky was going around the room asking the children what they wanted to do. He was a white man. He was in a foster home at the time. He was a teacher. Mr. Otrosky was going around asking the children in the class. There was white children in the class, too. It wasn't just all black folks. In fact, Malcolm was one of the few black children in the foster home. What they wanted to be when they grew up. And Malcolm said, I want to be a lawyer. This is in the autobiography. And Malcolm had said it before.
Yes.
And Mr. Otrosky told him, Malcolm, be serious. You know, niggas don't become lawyers.
Damn.
And what I found interesting is that the reason why Malcolm, well, one of the reasons why Malcolm was assassinated was because he was acting on the highest level of what a lawyer is. He was defending his people against the United States
wow.
of America. So in so many ways, Malcolm did become that lawyer that he talked about. In fact, he became a better lawyer had he, even though he didn't go to school for it. He became a better lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
He was a black man's lawyer. And you can't be a black man's lawyer learning law in the white man's school. It's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
He learned black man law on the street, and he applied that. And so now we stop again and we ask ourselves, where is Malcolm in us? Where is that spirit? Malcolm was a, well, shining black prince, but that brother was powerful. Where is he now? What has he left us? What's his legacy to us? And your generation, Sasha, Kandike, it's your generation that's going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've dedicated my life somewhat to being able to become part of the process, be someone that can be spoken to, you know, mentoring, advice, information. And I'm asking the others in my generation to do the same thing. You know, get some courage up in you. And I'm not speaking to everybody. I'm only speaking to those that are not doing what they're supposed to do. And remember, the hottest part of hell is reserved for those who stood by and just watched and didn't do anything.
Mm.
So,
wow.
What do y'all think?
Well, it's hard to, one of the things that I said before, when I consider when you were talking about Charles Barkley, and then when I was thinking about things that Kanye West has and Candace Owens, and even please don't attack me. Because this is not specific to black people, but I'm just talking about people that are hated or loathed or whatever the word you want to use. But if you listen to certain things that they're saying, it makes sense. And I know everybody feels like 6ix9ine is a snitch, and I think he's an idiot. He's young and he's stupid and he's an idiot. But there's certain things that he says that make sense. Like he went on a rant yesterday, I think it was yesterday, on his live or on IG or something like that, talking about the industry and how the industry buys certain spots in the Billboard charts and how you can't, like, you have to be successful and work for your own success as opposed to depending on certain companies like Billboard and other like music companies to make you successful and to get your name out there. Like, he may be an idiot, but there are things that he says, and this is why I've said what I said about him and gotten into arguments with many people. There are things that he says that make sense for millennials now, and that's one of the reasons why they're so attracted to him. But one of the things that I said a long time ago is that the creator, God, however you want to say it, is going to put the best message in the worst messenger, so only the people that are supposed to hear it are going to hear it. Because not everybody is going to get the message of Kanye West, and not everybody is going to – because he said something about the 13th Amendment needed to be reversed. Nobody agreed with him. There's so many people, I can't say nobody, there's a lot of people that didn't agree with him. There's a lot of people that attacked him for what he said, even beyond the slavery and all the other stuff. But he's not wrong. The way he said it might have been wrong. The 13th Amendment, everybody thinks that that freed slaves. And all it did was put them in a different, you know, because as I've learned from you, Daddy, and as we've researched, slavery didn't end because white people felt bad. Slavery ended because the people that won the Civil War had found out a better way for the world to go forward. And it was, instead of the product being the slave, the product was a technological product that was run by the slave. And that's exactly what it is now. That's one of the reasons why, allegedly, the coronavirus, COVID-19, has hit the black community and minority community so hard, and because they are on the front lines when it comes to, you know, cleaning the street and nurses and all the people that are out there the most are people of color. The slaves have gone from being the machine to being behind and running the machine just because mm-hmm. that was the advanced way of living. So mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that I got even from what you're saying and from what we're discussing is that we are all being distracted, even when it comes to the foundation of racism itself. Racism is a distraction to black and white people. The people that are in charge of making sure that racism still exists have convinced white people a certain thing about black people and have convinced black people a certain thing about white people. Racism may not affect white people in the same way that it affects black people, but it still runs their life in a similar way. Both sides and all sides have been mentally deranged and traumatized when it comes to racism. And the people that are running things and the people, the media, and the people that are not even just the media, but the people behind the media that are millionaires and billionaires, the people that we don't even know about, they are the ones that are making sure that white people still feel superior and that black people still feel inferior and that they're fighting each other. So racism is a distraction to everybody. It's not just something that affects black people, because everybody is being, bamboozled. That's the word I wanted to use. Everybody, black people, white people, and everything. There is a video on the Shade Room that I showed it to you, Candace, earlier. There is a video on the Shade Room of Pauly D from the Jersey Shore. I'm sure everybody knew who that was. Everybody that watched the Jersey Shore, do you know who that is, Daddy?
I know who it is, but I didn't see what you're talking about. But I do know who you're talking about. The Jersey Shore, that show
with Snooks. Say wow. Pauly D looked like an average-looking Italian person, and I'm putting that in air quotes because everybody has their own opinion of what it was. He looked, you know, he had some color, but he had that slick back hair, and he had that type of attitude. And there's a video on the Shade Room of Pauly D, and now everybody in the comments is like, I thought that was a black man because he's browner, like brown, and he has a beard and he has a fitted cap on. And when I saw it, I was like, what in the hell? Everybody was like, it looks like Shamar Moore's brother. Like, I was shocked. And I know about the strong African presence in Italy. I know about that, and I was still shocked. But to read the comments, people really believe that melanin doesn't make a difference in their life. And it's really shocking to know that there's so many people that just really, really don't know about the actuality of what is going on in the world. And they were saying he's blackfishing, and they were saying that it was cultural appropriation. But it's literally like, I made a comment under it, and I had Italian people explaining to black people what goes on in their communities and how they're treated as darker-skinned Italian people. I have people explaining it, but it's still, we have been so traumatized that we don't even see what's going on around the world. We just see what's going on in the United States. We don't even realize that there's people around the world that are being affected by what's going on. And I think that that's one of the messages that Malcolm X had, and one of the things that he understood towards the end of his life. Right? Would you say that that was something that he began to understand around the world, that people, that we were closer than we think we are?
You know, it's interesting because when I, when your brother Heru and I did that documentary on Malcolm, What Would Malcolm Do Today? We focused on the last year of his life. And I'll tell you, that came from my experience at Newport. One of my students said to me, and I remember the day, I remember where I was. I was in Van Something Hall. That's where I taught this class this year. Sasha, you would know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, you know, huh?
What did you say it was?
It was Van Something. Van Something Building. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a van
in the
name.
It was the one that looked like the school. It was the
one
that looked like the high school.
It was way down the block.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's where I had the class that term. And
he said, you know,
we spend a lot of time talking about Malcolm X. That's what we all focus on. That's what we're excited about.
Mm-hmm.
But what about Elhaj Malik El Shabazz?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the person we should be looking at? At who, after all of his life, who he became that last year of his life.
Right.
That's why I did that particular documentary, focusing on his last year, specifically looking at two speeches he made. One was Message to the Grassroots, and the other was The Ballot or the Bullet. Phenomenal speeches. I encourage people to go back and read it or listen to it or whatever. Powerful conversation. What Malcolm came to realize, and that's why I say to us that it's important to travel. It's important to see the world.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because when we get the chance now that we're here, you know, but to see the world.
Yeah, right,
because Malcolm said, he said, I drank from cups when he went on his Hajj. He said, I drank from cups with blue eyes and blonde hair. Mm. And he said, I was comfortable doing it.
Mm.
He said, never in my life would I ever think I would drink after a white man.
Hmm.
He said, but when you travel the world and you're exposed, and of course, this was a white man who was a Muslim, and he was doing his Hajj too. But when you travel the world and when you see other parts of the world, you come to realize it's not like America.
Right.
America is the greatest nation on the planet, I believe. It has the potential to be great.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, when I've gone to Europe, Holland in particular, UK, there's racism. There's all that there. But there's another thing also that's there that I don't see in America. And you have to experience to understand it.
Mm.
But Malcolm in his last life went through a transformation. And I'm not just talking about white people. I'm talking about in general. In his own, it was almost like what we're all doing now. We're searching inside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
In these moments of the pandemic, where we're looking inside and asking ourselves, damn, what are we going to do now? And that's what Malcolm did. Malcolm asked himself, what is the answer now? Now that I've seen that everybody ain't the way it is in America, and he saw how limited the Nation of Islam was.
Mm.
He saw that great people, phenomenal human beings, but they were limited in their scope. And there were adjustments that Malcolm made in his transformation the last year of his life that began to develop a deeper understanding of what he had to do. And when he came back, and when the forces saw who he had become, he was the walking dead. Because they knew. They knew at that point he could convince white people to change. He could convince Christians to change. He came back reaching his hand out to Martin Luther King and to all the other scholars and all the other people that he had come in contact with. And so he realized that this was the time now.
Mm.
And he decided that he was going to make those changes, and he did. It became very dangerous. And he is a legacy. And like I say, great Africans don't die. They just become legends. And that is, from my perspective, having grown during his time, been in his presence one time, 7 years old, that's the memory that I carry with me. That's the memory that I carry. And that's what I try to share with people who may not have known him, may not have ever been around him. He was a phenomenal man who realized that the price of freedom sometimes is death. And we ain't even being asked to put our life on the line. So
yep.
We're blessed. I lived through a time when I would have to get on the back of the bus. I lived through that time. It's hard for your generation to figure that out, that, you know, when that train used to, you know, if you were going down south to visit your family in Alabama and you got on the train in New York, somewhere around the Washington, D.C., Virginia area, black folk had to get up off that train and go to the back of the train to continue the trip. Think about it. There were times if you went to McDonald's, they wouldn't serve you. Or they would say you have to go around to takeout, or you'd have to go around the corner where the drive-thru is. Can you imagine that black folk couldn't go into McDonald's, that you had to go to a drive-thru, and you had to get online with the cars?
I can't imagine, like, shopping there.
Yeah.
But
you
see
black people
somewhere, and they...
Yes, that's how it was. Simple, that's how it was. That's in my time. I'm not even talking about my daddy, although it was his time, too, and my mother's time. I'm talking about I grew up. I was born during this time.
That's crazy.
That's how it was. So I think I'm having a problem. Oh, no, I ain't having a problem. And you see, and then we can close out on this. Listen to what they're saying. I also tell people, be careful how you say what you say.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Kanye made that statement about 400 years, I understood what he said. Yeah. But he didn't say it right. But, you know, you had the best answer for that, Sasha, because you said something about, well, I think I may have added to it, but you were telling me the whole thing about how his mind functions is that, and then I said, you know, it's like writing
about
the sentences in your mind on index cards. And while you're writing it out, it's making a lot of sense to you. But then all of a sudden, you drop the cards and they get out of order.
Yep.
But you say what you have to say out of order instead of putting them back where they belong.
That is exactly what I was saying. I was trying to explain it. And it's crazy. It's sad because people will understand. People will understand what I'm saying, and if I was to say it out of the context of certain people, they will agree with me. But the moment that you mention certain people, they disagree. They disagree with what you're saying simply because of who said it, and that's why I said what I said about putting the message in the worst messenger, because only certain people are going to get it, because not everybody is supposed to get the message. But when you explained it that way about the index cards, it's exactly, in my opinion, Kanye West, absolutely. And I know that we have to go, but I realized something also after. He tried to do what he was doing, and immediately after that, he went straight to church. I really think that he's trying to get black people to understand what he's saying, because he realized that the way he was saying it, people couldn't get it. So immediately after that, he started doing his Sunday services. I really, really believe that he's trying to get black people to see what's going on, because he immediately went to Christianity after. And that is the thing that black people, no matter what, like, that's the thing that got black people through slavery. But like you said about the boat, like, once you get to the shore, you got to let the boat off. But we still hold on to a story that was stolen from us and reconstructed to make us look like the bad people. But he immediately went to religion after he got attacked in the other way. So I really do believe that even if he doesn't realize what he's doing, I think something inside of him is working to make him be to help certain black people. And that's just my opinion, because most people are going to agree with me because of cognitive dissonance anyway. But I just had to add that because I know that you're ready to round it out. But I just, because I can keep going, and I'll stop there.
Hey, listen, keep doing your thing, both of y'all. I'm so proud of y'all and all the work that you're doing. And once again, when you hear them banging the pots and you hear them shouting out for the essential workers, understand that they're talking about y'all.
Aww.
Tommy Kate, you are saving lives out here. If it weren't for you being able to work from that social worker's perspective, you help people every day when you talk to them. You're taking
Absolutely.
Them through a process. You may not be
yep.
in a hospital. You may not be a doctor or a nurse. But you're doing something that after all that is done, you're the one that puts their lives back together again. And my man Kamani.
Absolutely.
My man Kamani is doing his thing.
Keeping us healthy.
Because for everybody that's doing this exercise, like I told them yesterday,
yeah.
that's their lifeline. For some people, exercise is their lifeline. And I am
yeah.
sure, like you said, he's giving them a little advice along the way, too, as to how to get through this.
Yeah. Yep, I listen
Sasha,
to it. I hear it.
Let me tell you something. One of the things that hurting folk and going hit them hard is the economic system.
Oh, goodness.
And the work that
oh,
you're
man.
Doing is assisting them in understanding what are you going to do economically when you come up out of this.
Mm.
And, of course, mm. one of the most important people on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, are the people that get me where I got to go. So Chris, in doing her bus driving thing, she's
yep.
getting, she's keeping New York moving.
Absolutely.
And it's important.
Absolutely.
I'm glad that they're paying respect to the essential workers, but after all this is over, I hope the value that they have for y'all now will not only continue, but get bigger and better, because y'all deserve it for what you're doing. And I admire the work
Thank
that you're
you.
Doing. So just keep doing what you're doing.
And we feel the same way about you.
Yeah.
No doubt, together.
I'm going to say,
no
don't
question.
Forget about you.
No doubt. But I'm focusing on y'all right now, because y'all are the future.
Aw, thank you.
And I just admire the work that you're doing and the world that you're creating and all of your colleagues, all of your peers, all of the young people out here that are struggling.
Hmm.
I just have a lot of respect and I have a lot of faith in the future, because it's like folk used to say to me, what about the future? What do you think? This is when I was a teacher. And I say, do we have a kindergarten class? Because if we have
yeah.
a kindergarten class, we have hope. Because the hope
yeah,
is
that's
you.
Amazing. That is amazing.
So, family, it has been wonderful to celebrate this day with you.
Yes.
And I just want to thank you all for all that you do. I'm about to get down on some work here so that we can get this thing going.
There we go.
Yes, and everybody.
All right.
Yes,
keep on,
everybody.
Keep on.
No doubt. So, family, you all take care. Those of us who are listening on the radio, I send my regards to you. Happy Earth Day to our ancestor, our brother El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz, and I just pray for the future, and we'll be together again in 2 weeks.
There we go.
Sounds good.
All right.
Come on.
No doubt. Hotep family.
Necessary.
Hotep.
Hotep.
white nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, po nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga. Light nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, po nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga. OJ like, I'm not black, I'm OJ. Okay, house nigga, don't fuck with me, I'm a feel nigga, with Sean Cutlery. Go play the quarters where the butlers be. I'ma play the corners where the hustlers be. I told them, please don't die over the neighborhood that your mama rentin'. Take your drug money and buy the neighborhood. That's how you rinse it. I bought every V12 engine. Wish I could take it back to the beginning. I could've bought a place in Dumbo before it was Dumbo for like $2 million. That same building today, it's worth $25 million. Guess how I'm feeling? Dumbo. Light nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, po nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga. Light nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, po nigga, house nigga, feel nigga. Want to know what's more important than throwing away money at a strip club? Credit. You ever wonder why Jewish people own all the property in America? That's how they did it. Financial freedom, my only hope. Fuck living rich and dying broke. I bought some artwork for $1 million. 2 years later, that shit worth $2 million. 2 years later, that shit worth $8 million. I can't wait to get this shit to my children. Y'all think it's bougie, I'm like, it's fine, but I'm trying to give you $1 million worth of game for $9.99. I turn a 2 to a 4, 4 to a 8. I turn my life into a nice first week release date. Y'all here still taking advances, huh? Me and my niggas taking real chances, y'all on the gram holding money to your ear. There's a disconnect, we don't call that money over here, yeah. Light nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, po nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga. Light nigga, dark nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, po nigga, house nigga, feel nigga.